And I'm Z. Hello, hello.
Hola, ¿cómo estás? Konnichiwa. All of those. Welcome, welcome.
Welcome, welcome. Sprinkle, sprinkle.
Sprinkle, sprinkle.
I don't know if you ever see that lady. That's what she does. She does sprinkle, sprinkle. She's like those relationship gurus that self-proclaimed relationship
on the TikTok
gurus.
And on the Facebook and on the Instagram, on the IG.
And that's her.
I've heard the sprinkle, thing. Sprinkle. Yes, I've heard that.
So welcome back. You know, this once a month recording has definitely been a good thing because I've been able to kind of, you know, shift gears and focus on other things and get my house in order and do some other, you know, personal self-care things. So I'm glad that we switched to this.
I was just thinking about that this morning as I was getting ready for some stuff. And I said, you know what? I think this transition has been good so far.
It has been. Yeah, it definitely has been. So, you know, other than that, nothing has been happening. I mean, the next few weeks are going to be like, I'm just slammed between appointments and spring break. And
is it time for spring break already? Because the fact that it's March is kind of throwing me. I mean, I know February is short and it went by really quick. However, the fact that it's March is kind of like, wow. Yes. And it's birthday party season in our crew. Our tribe has a whole bunch of March birthdays.
Yes. And so I have, Charlie's birthday's coming up, my anniversary's coming up, and then another friend's birthday. She's having like an Oscar theme birthday celebration.
That's next week, right? Are we like dressing up? I think we're like,
yeah, she said to dress up. So
like we're going to the Oscars. Is there a step in repeat?
Yeah.
So I can wear some fancy clothes.
Yes. Yes. So
remember she did that for her bridal shower too, and we all came in our bridal
bridesmaid's gown. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
That was fun.
So then somebody else is having a birthday party. Charlie has a birthday party to go to today after this. Mm-hmm. Then we're going to California. So we're doing for spring break. And so Galen can't go. So my husband can't go. So it's going to be me, my sister, my nephew, Charlie, and myself. And this is Charlie's first flight. So
cool.
And Stephanie's partner, fiance, he can't go. So that's why we're going together. Because if not, then the kids would have just been sitting home looking at us, and we weren't.
That's funny.
So, and this would be my first, our first trip together. It's crazy, right? Me and my sister, as adults. This is our first trip together as adults. So,
with the babies.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, we've never gone anywhere as adults together. So,
That's cool.
Yeah. She don't invite me anywhere anyway.
She don't invite me nowhere.
She does. They're actually going to Vietnam in June.
Oh, really? My sister loves Vietnam.
Yeah, for 2 weeks. Yeah. They're going to spend
really enjoyed it. I think they went there for their honeymoon. Honeymoon, like our anniversary trip. When they were living in Hong Kong, they went to Vietnam. And they went to Thailand too, or I don't know. You know, it's like going to like Florida over there when you live overseas. Going to another country is like
country is nothing. It's nothing.
So
today's and today's podcast topic is decision fatigue, something I think we've all experienced or are experiencing. And probably on a consistent basis, especially since COVID, but we'll get into that. First, let's get into some quick hot tea.
All right.
If you have been on the internet, and you don't even have to have been on TikTok, it's been on Facebook. She's been on Tamron Hall show.
Wait, she was on Tamron Hall show?
Yeah, she was on everything. She's been making the circuit. So there's this woman named Risa Tisa who laid out a 50-part TikTok video series detailing her relationship, subsequent marriage, and then divorce of a man who by all means was diabolical. And diabolical in the way, like, you're used to hearing stories about women getting cheated on, their men having side babies and beating their ass up and down the street. And so when we hear those stories, it's just like, those are the things we're like, wow, this woman went through a lot. But we never really think that there are smaller emotional, mental abuses, things that people do on a smaller scale that actually have severe consequences and trauma over our lives.
Exactly.
Yes. Her husband, the person she decided to align herself with, was a sociopath, a pathological liar. It had later been determined by his family that when he was younger, I think they said he was diagnosed to be bipolar and maybe even schizophrenic. But I think he has like borderline personality disorder. And he just lied to her about the smallest things. And her conclusion was the reason why he lied so much was because he liked to see her get her hopes up and then get cracked. And then it
sadistic.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. We're used to saying, oh, so he beat the shit out of her. That's crazy. He stole all her money. That's crazy. But to literally say he liked to watch my hopes get dashed, like he got a thrill out of that.
Wow.
That
is he a narcissist? Because that's what some narcissists do.
But I think there is some narcissism there. I think there is some narcissism there. Yeah, I watched the whole 50-part series. I didn't watch it all at once. It was over a course of like a weekend. I was grocery shopping, braiding Charlie's hair. I was doing a whole bunch of stuff while I was listening to this.
I recall how intrigued people were with it. I just never got into the whole thing, but I'm intrigued. Got my popcorn.
And there's three things that I want to take out. Like, I'm not going to go through the whole thing because if you want to find it, you can find it. If you've already found it, you know. If you didn't, then I don't know what to tell you. But the three things that I want to pull out from it was, one, most of this happened. Well, this happened during COVID, the beginning stages of COVID. And I want to preface it with that because COVID made people do a lot of things they normally wouldn't do.
True. It took people out of their comfort zone and out of, I think, their regular mental processing capacities.
Exactly. Because you didn't know what was happening, right? Mm-hmm. In the beginning, if we think back, we just heard there's this mystery disease that is taking people out.
Right.
And everybody was scared because there was like a fear campaign. Not to say that I know COVID is real. Trust me. Mm-hmm. But in the beginning, it was just like, we don't know where it's coming from. It's from China. How do you get it? What does it do? Nobody knew.
Right.
I do know that it was in this country well before they started shutting shit down. Because I know people were getting really sick in like November, December.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say this. The one thing I would say is COVID made people do a lot of things that we wouldn't normally do. Make decisions that we normally would. People were out here stockpiling, hoarding, and never had done that before in their lives. People really thought it was the end of days.
Yeah.
And they were preparing to see their Lord and Savior.
Mm-hmm.
So being fully aware of that, there are a lot of decisions she made that she says and that I say were made based solely in the fact that it was COVID. She let this man move in with her, not like within 2 weeks. Because because it was, they said you had to quarantine. So they were dating heavily prior to this. And they were like, well, let's just quarantine together so we can continue this relationship. Now, would I do that? No. Again, I'm giving her grace because COVID made people do a lot of things that they normally wouldn't do.
Right.
Two, I've never seen somebody take so much accountability. She never in this whole series say, I know I'm not dumb. No, she was like, I was stupid. I was an idiot. I made choices that I normally wouldn't make. I believed this man when I shouldn't. I should have trusted my gut. I should have trusted my intuition when he said this, when he said that. And I just want us all to take a pause with that because I feel like women, when it comes to our intuition, we know.
Yeah.
We get gaslit to think that it's not
that part,
but we know.
We know when we know, we know, and there's no explaining it. But like you said, we know.
But when we know, we know.
We can definitely get gaslit to make a decision contrary to what our gut is telling us. because Absolutely. Of what we want to believe.
Absolutely. And so that's one. And I mean, that's two. That's part two. That's the second thing I'm going to address. She took full accountability for the fact that she made some dumb choices.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third thing is, because this has been a conversation that has been surrounding this, I really want us to get away from shaming people, body shaming people, looks shaming people, because a lot of people are saying that she did these things because she was quote unquote big backed, because she is a larger size woman, and generally larger size women are desperate for love. And so they tend to ignore red flags. I'm going to tell you, on Al Gore's internet today.
Wow.
I know women who are tiny, who are plus, 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 plus size, and bitches that's in the middle, who have all made dumb choices when it comes to a relationship. Your size has nothing to do with it. The way you look has nothing to do with it. And to say that someone isn't as deserving of love because they are a certain size or they look a certain way is very, I don't know. It's almost just as diabolical.
It is, because you figure like, so only certain people should have certain things because of what size shirt, dress, shoes they wear is just, it's twisted and it's ignorant. Mm-hmm. You know, it's opening up yourself to love regardless of what you look like should not automatically make you a victim, because it's inherent for you as a person to want to, not everybody, but to want to have companionship and love and attention regardless of how you show up in this world physically,
and to open yourself up to love should not make you then be a victim of abuse, of hate, of anything. Mm-hmm. And I'll say this, because this is part of decision making, right? And this is how, for me, this situation ties in to the topic that we have today, which is decision fatigue. Mm-hmm. I went through a situation some years ago, maybe over a decade ago at this point, where I had felt like, it's almost a, not even quite a decade, but I started to feel like I could not trust my own judgment.
Mm-hmm.
That I was finding myself in a situation where I'm like, I would never let somebody, like, why am I even, you know what I mean? Like, what am I doing
to this indecision?
Right.
But you got to think about myself, those things that can infect and impact your decision making that you.
Exactly.
You know,
he was, I'm like, but he appeared to be a good guy. He appeared to be somebody who genuinely wanted to get to know me, get the whatever the case may be. We do this, right? We make these decisions. And I remember in therapy, it was like, I don't trust my own judgment now. I second guess everything that I do. Anytime I meet somebody, or whether it was, and this is like, I'm not just talking about relationships. I'm talking romantic relationships. I talk about like friendships. I felt like I could not trust, like, is this person being sincere and genuine when they want to sit, when they say, hey, let's hang out?
Right.
They really want to hang out.
Like, or is there an ulterior motive?
Right. And I got so exhausted because I'm like, I can't keep second guessing and trying to figure out what this person's motive is, and what, it just got to be too much.
Mm-hmm.
And I just became exhausted. And I just didn't want to make any decision about anything, because I had been doing these mental gymnastics where I was trying to figure out, like, even thinking about what to eat was just getting to be too much, because I was too much in my head all the time. Yes. And I'd say our decision for women, I can't speak for men because I'm not a man, but for women, we have this internal decision maker for us. It's our gut. Mm-hmm. It's our intuition, right?
Yes.
And even in the best of circumstances, like, I feel like even in the best of circumstances, sometimes our guts tell us this is a good situation. This doesn't seem too bright. Something's a little weird about this.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want you, if you're out there listening, to know that, listen, trust your gut.
Yes.
Believe in whatever it is telling you. Don't beat yourself up for making decisions that, mistakes that, I mean, listen.
They happen. It's going to happen.
They do.
You're not always going to listen to your intuition. It's
no.
part of life. That's part of your decision tree. But don't beat yourself up about not always going with your intuition.
Right. And understand that sometimes we are, it's harder for us to make the best decisions when there is a level of fatigue that we are experiencing because of all of the decisions that we're making in other areas of our life. So with that, I'll say we could take a quick break and then come back with the full topic, decision fatigue.
So, like Z said, we're talking about decision fatigue. So this, there is this concept called choosing therapy, which kind of helps us kind of frame out what we're going to be talking about and diving into today. So it describes decision fatigue as a phenomenon that occurs when a person has made a lot of decisions, big or small, back to back, and they begin to feel psychologically drained by it. There's more, as more decisions show up for them to make, a person grows more careless about their choices or avoids making choices altogether, which Z talked about in the intro. And we all feel this, and whether we have ever coined the term exactly, there's a point in our lives that we all go through this. We're like, I can't make another decision. Like, I literally cannot mentally make a decision. There's only so much mental energy that we all have that we can utilize for our decision making. And then if it's too much and it's overused, that's when fatigue occurs. When we have 6 million different decisions to make, what you're going when you wake up, what you're eating, what you're driving, what you're working, you know, do I need to pay this bill? Do I need to take care of this? Did I work out today? Did I do something at work? Did I not write it down? It's overwhelming, especially when they're difficult decisions and you have to make them back to back without having a break in between. It just adds kind of like insult to injury in the sense of like, oh my God, I have to do this now. What? It's too much. So what are the symptoms? What are the symptoms?
So some of the symptoms, girl, it's a lot of symptoms that you can experience with decision fatigue. And I think some people don't even realize, like this was a phenomenon, or I shouldn't say a phenomenon, but this is a topic that I just was just brought to my attention, the name for it, right? I understood that there was something going on. I just didn't know what to call it. And I saw a video on Instagram about 2 months ago where someone that I follow, she was on a TV show that I absolutely love. And she was doing this skit between her and I don't know if it was her friend or whatever. And he was asking her out to dinner and she was like, oh, okay. He's like, well, where do you want to go to eat? She's like, I don't know. He's like, well, thanks. She's like, I don't know. Like, you figure it out. He's like, well, she's like, I literally cannot make another. She's like, I cannot make another decision. And he's like, it sounds like you have decision fatigue. And she's like, decision fatigue. So some of the symptoms of decision fatigue would include things like increase in negative emotions, feeling mentally drained, weakened judgment, decreased interest in making a decision, impulsively making decisions. So I'm going to stop right there. Mm-hmm. So those first five, increase in negative emotions, feeling mentally drained, weakened judgment, decreased interest in making a decision, and impulsively making decisions. I can tell you that I am at a point where I am literally physically drained.
Yeah.
Mentally drained. I mean, I am mentally, last year, it was bad. And for me, being that mentally drained leads to, I'm realizing, the depression and the anxiety.
It can be triggering for that because you have to make those decisions, but you don't feel like you're capable to make those choices. And that further can add to your depression and anxiety because it's like, I can't do it. You physically feel like you cannot do it.
You can't. And I realize that you know, people say that depression is worrying about the past, anxiety is worrying about the future, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you haven't reconciled or forgiven yourself with decisions that you made in the past, then you are constantly thinking about the same decisions that you may have to make in the future. Mm-hmm. That is mentally draining.
It is. And it's then a cycle. It's on a cycle.
It is.
It's like, if I don't make this decision, then I can't make that decision to make the next decision, which is now overwhelming me because I have to make, I didn't make that past six decisions I needed to make.
Right. You start to have negative emotions about the decisions. And then even the smallest things, right? Like yesterday, it was raining. Right. I knew I needed to go to the grocery store. Mm-hmm. I knew that I had a lot to do today that was going to interfere with me going to the grocery store. And I was like, I was like literally sitting there. OK, do I go? Do I not go? Do I not go? Do I not go? Like, should I wait for the rain to stop? Should I just go? And then maybe the rain will stop when I go outside. And uh-huh. then it was just like, what the like? And then I was like, I don't even care. I don't even want
to
make this decision.
You get
anymore.
To that point.
I don't care.
You know, and then certain things get missed because you don't mm-hmm. care. And stuff goes right. by the wayside.
Right. And then I wound up getting up. Yeah. And then I wound up getting up and going to the grocery store. I impulsively made a decision right before that to just start ordering stuff off of Walmart Plus, because I have Walmart Plus. So I was like, I'll just order my groceries off of Walmart Plus. When I did that impulsively, what happened? I didn't order everything that I freaking needed. And
you
I
forgot.
Didn't. And I had to, go out and get in anyway. So that's what I'm saying. Even the smallest thing, like going to the damn grocery store, was a lot, right?
But it can be.
Yes. So those are the first five, right? Then you get procrastinating, making decisions, brain fog, regret or dissatisfaction, physical discomfort and feeling overwhelmed. And I know people were like, what do you mean physical discomfort? How can you have physical discomfort over making a decision? Stress from making a decision can be tension headaches, eye twitching, nausea, mm-hmm. and other tummy troubles. Yesterday.
Panic attacks.
Yes. I have, y'all probably think, Zarifa, you got a lot of shit. And I do. But mind your business. I have stomach issues, right? And they tested me for everything from like Crohn's disease to celiac disease, everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, my stomach was just, and still is not even fully where it needs to be today. My stomach was in knots. I was feeling like crap yesterday. My stomach was giving me all kinds of problems. And I was sitting there like, why is my stomach hurting so bad? I just don't understand. Mm-hmm. And I was like, bitch, it's because you worked yourself up in a tizzy over making the smallest of decisions.
That psychosomatic connection, that mind-body connection is so paramount and so real that I don't think folks have a nervous stomach and stuff, but I don't think people realize the impact of that mind-body connection or how real it truly is for folks.
No.
And how it shows up in the physical space.
Absolutely not. And, you know, I don't know, like for me, I get a lot of brain fog. I do. Mm-hmm. And I do feel overwhelmed a lot. I'm not much of a procrastinator because my type A personality doesn't allow for that a lot.
I'm so glad I have friends like you, Zarifa, because me and procrastination, we be skipping down the road together a lot. Hand in hand.
I just can't.
Friends like you that I appreciate because, yo, Zarifa be on it. Let me tell y'all.
But it then leads to other things because my inability to procrastinate then's like, okay, well, I have to get this done now because if I don't get this done now, mind never stops. You know what I'm saying? Like,
fair point.
Never stops. So when we like, I'll take it for the very small thing. Planning trips with y'all.
Yeah.
Every year I plan a grocery trip. I quit. I do. And I think we've
really
about
does,
this
y'all. Oh my goodness.
I quit. I say I am never planning another trip with y'all ever again.
And then next year comes around and she's like, all right, ladies, here we go.
And we see the text and we're like, all right, Reese.
It's that time again. It's that time
again. It's that time again. It's that time.
Speaking of which, I haven't even sent it this year, so thank you. Let's make sure we get that taken care of.
Yes, that is true.
So every you know, just doing that, and I'm like, okay, I want to make sure that I get a hotel that meets everybody's standards. I want to make sure that you know, the restaurants, it has something for everybody's palate. I need to make sure, like, that shit is exhausting.
She's really good at it though, y'all. Let me tell y'all.
I appreciate her. but even that, right? I think the reason why sometimes, like, especially like in the last year, I think it's because I was faced with too many decisions in so many different areas of my life at once.
Mm-hmm.
Too many.
Well, you figure you're balancing 6 million things.
Yes.
And then there's things you want to do versus things you have to do. And I think that the intersection of those is where also the decision fatigue comes in. Because we always want to do the fun stuff that we want to do, knowing that we have to make decision. For us to do the fun stuff, we need to do the stuff we need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think, like, a lot of people are experiencing this decision fatigue more so now, because I think I realize that there's pre-COVID and post-COVID, right? Mm-hmm. Pre-COVID Zarifa is way different, is different than post-COVID Zarifa. And if you look at your life and how you live it and the things you do, I think you will all notice that there's a way that you live life before COVID and a new way of the you do things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that because COVID, I think COVID did this, and this is why we see, this is what I think COVID exposed in two aspects.
Mm-hmm.
One, it took away our ability to make decisions for a brief period of time. You could not go anywhere.
Yeah.
You could not do anything. You had no choices to make, right? And I think that this is part of why we're seeing a lot of people, an uptick in, like, I don't want to say, I feel like these mental health problems have always been there, but there's an uptick of it actually being diagnosed in a lot of people. Yes.
Were amplified because you had to be in that space and you had to either face them or not. And then it brought it to the surface.
Yes. I feel like if you were someone who was already highly in tune with what was going on in your life and you realized that, oh, wow, I don't have any any decisions. This feels good. Right. And then once the decisions came back, you were like, oh, God. Now here's the anxiety because now I got to start this shit back up again.
Right.
That's one way it exposes it. The other way is people who like have just were like, oh, you know, life is life. And then COVID, they're like, oh, it's cool. I'm having other people make decisions for me. And this is great because this is what I like. And then when COVID was done, you're like, now I got to make these decisions again.
Right.
Oh my gosh. I got to be more responsible.
Be more responsible comment is key because you think about it, while we were in COVID, because decisions were being made for us, it was hands off. We didn't have to think but so much, if you will. And now you got to be an adult, so to speak, and start adulting again in certain areas and take responsibility for the choices you made.
Mm-hmm. And then I think those people, it was just like fatigue in a different sense, because this is like, oh, if I don't do it, it's not going to get done. Oh, wow. Okay. This doesn't. And I feel like a lot of this is also with the younger kids, right? Because for that period of time, they didn't have a lot of choices, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you were in there's a particular age range that now these kids are suffering because for a period of time, the decision process was taken away from them at a high level. Mm-hmm. Now they're going out to college and they're like, how am I supposed to make these decisions?
That is so true. They really don't know what to do.
No.
They really, you know, that is such a good point, Zarifa, because these young people, they really have, their decision-making has been so thwarted because of the situation.
It has, but I think they are overwhelmed, I think. Yeah. They are feeling overwhelmed with the number of decisions that they realize they have to make.
Right. But do you think when we had to make decisions when we were their age, it's different. It's different, but why do you think it's not, because think about all the stuff that we had to do on our own, because we were self-sufficient kids, teenagers, now adults. And now these kids don't, the younger generation, this is like, oh my goodness for them.
Here's my thought on it. I think we're both experiencing different levels of decision fatigue for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I think our generation is experiencing decision fatigue over a longer period of time. Mm-hmm. For the things that you just said, we were self-sufficient. We had to be. Yeah. I was a latchkey kid at 10 years old.
Me too.
With a 6-year-old sister that I had to be responsible for at 10.
And cook for and do all those things and make sure that everything was good. That was normal.
That's what I'm saying. At 10 years old, I'm walking home literally with a key around my neck to get home with a 6-year-old. I cannot imagine being 10 and having to deal with somebody like Charlie. Yes, I can, because I did it.
Right. Exactly.
Because my sister and Charlie are like mirror images of each other at this age. So, and then, you know, we did that. And then I had to, especially, I feel like if you're the older, if you are the only girl in your family with a bunch of boys, or if you're the eldest child, I feel like you experience decision fatigue at a higher level as well, because you are always the one that was supposed to be responsible, to make all the good choices, to do all the right things. And this is from a very young age. So it's no wonder why we are 45, 44, 43, 46, 48. And this goes into midlife crisis that we'll be talking about next. Where we're just like, I don't want to make another damn decision. Don't ask me for shit. I don't want to make it. At you want to go to dinner? You pick the dinner. You want to eat? Figure out what you want to eat. I cannot do it.
Yes.
And then women are, you have to be either a stay-at-home mother or you're working. And if you're working, you still have to be a mom. It just doesn't stop.
Yes.
You go home from your 9 to 5 to work 5 to 9.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to make choices. I feel like you make choices about, okay, when can she go to, or when can he go to the dentist? They have to be in soccer. They have to be in some type of activity. How am I going to do their hair tomorrow? What are they going to wear? What am I going to wear? Where are we going to vacation this year as a family? How much money is that going to be? How are we going to save that money? Are we going to, like, it's constant.
There's never a space where it's just zone out.
Nope.
And which is a good place, what that means,
right? Which is a good place to kind of segue into like different examples of decision fatigue,
right? And where they come from. You know, you think about it, like Z just said, you make decisions, you make a lot of decisions every day. We ever took inventory of how many decisions from when we get up, what we're doing, are we going to brush our teeth first, we're going to take a shower first, we're going to bath first, are we going to go make coffee and then we're going to work out, or we're going to go back upstairs, we're going to read our little affirmations, or we're going to do it later. You know, we have different roles and jobs that we have to assume as soon as we wake up, right? And they all require their own respective decisions to get things moving. And the big one is, for if you don't live by yourself, your decisions are going to impact other people. You know, it could be your partner, your kids, your employees, if you're at your job, like, am I going to send this email out today because we have a meeting? Or are we going to cancel the meeting today? Are we going to, you know, decide, you know, to sidestep everything that we need to do today so I can do something else? You know, you're in the midst of a difficult life situation. So you have to do all of these things while your life is lifing, which in and of itself can be its own anxiety causing situation. You know, if you're, for example, picking up, planning a memorial service for someone, and you got to ask, someone is asking you, well, what kind of flowers do you want? Well, where's the repast going to be? Where's the venue? What's the going to be on the menu items? And this is on top of all the stuff that you have to deal with when you just woke up, just to get out the door.
And can I put a pin right there? Because I saw something that speaks to this specifically. I saw something was like, every time a person, and I think we may have talked about this before.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime somebody's going through something life-changing,
yeah,
people always say, well, what do you need? What do you need? What do you need? Yes. But they wait to have that question. They wait to ask you that when you're actually going through something.
Yeah.
And I read something and I saw this this woman talk about it. She says, you and your friend group, you with your spouse, you with your family, she had these conversations when nothing tragic is going on.
Right.
So when it does happen, you already know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So if you say to your friends, okay, if our respective spouses pass away, what is it that you want us to do for you? What can we do as a collective? Mm-hmm. When you have a baby, this is what would you like? What level of support are you going to need from us? Oh, I'll need this and this and that. So when it happens, you mm-hmm. don't have to, nobody has to ask you because you're already dealing with so much. Asking somebody another question when they're in the middle of a life, a difficult or life-changing situation
mm-hmm.
is a lot. Think about it.
It's massive. It's a heavy lift.
It is a very heavy lift. So I just wanted to say that maybe that's a good time to have conversations about these things ahead mm-hmm. of time. So you don't have to worry about, don't nobody ask me nothing. You want to know how you're going to show up for me? Here are all the ways. If in this situation, you can show mm-hmm. up for me. This situation, you can show up for me. This is how you can show up for me. So when it happens, you don't even have to ask. You just go straight into action.
Yeah. And that's something to really kind of sit with and think about as you move ahead with mm-hmm. certain things, to have things already set up. Even if you just have it jotted down, because we know certain things are inevitable. But when I'm in crisis mode, figuring out what to do when you're not in crisis mode and mm-hmm. having those decisions already established for you so that someone can step in to yes. help out and facilitate your situation. So you're not reactionary to it.
Yeah, that's it. Because I feel like when we are in crisis mode, that's when you see the impulsive decision making. You mm-hmm. feel overwhelmed, so you don't always make the best decisions. One of our friends, I remember, and she's with us right now. I know that during the time when she was going through losing her spouse, it's a very difficult time.
Mm-hmm.
And she has said on several occasions that she made a lot of decisions during that time that she would not have made, right? Mm-hmm. Because she was overwhelmed. And think about it. There's a lot of people coming at you from different directions. And mm-hmm. you have decision fatigue. And she probably didn't even know. Maybe today is like the light bulb went off. I had decision fatigue because I didn't want to make any more decisions. I was tired of making decisions. People were coming to me with too many questions. So I just started making decisions to get up because I was feeling overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't want to have to keep doing this because I'm tired. I'm trying to grieve. And you're asking me, what do I want to serve mm-hmm. at the repast? Can I have this of his? Can I stay with you? Mm-hmm. Can you do X, Y, and Z?
To her credit, though, I will say there were decisions that she was able to make where she tapped each of us in her tribe to help her out with certain things, to help her with certain areas of decision fatigue.
But that's because we knew. Mm-hmm. You know. And it's either because you've gone through your own situation.
Mm-hmm.
And all you have to do, all I have to say is, what do you need?
Yeah.
That's it. But if you had these conversations ahead of time, or if you know the person very well, you mm-hmm. go like, this is what I'm going to do for you. You don't even have to ask. I already know. I got it. I'm going to take care of this for you.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to, kind of point that out.
No, but I think that's important. That's important to give a real life description of it. Because in the midst of it, your head is not there. Whatever your situation may be, crisis or otherwise, it mm-hmm. really puts it in a different framework to look at. And you gotta realize that can cause uncertainty. For example, like the example that Zarifa brought up before about COVID, there was a lot of folks that didn't have the information about the decision, like, should I go outside? Should I not go outside? Should I wear a mask? Should I not wear a mask? Should I go and get the hand sanitizer? You know, you go back and forth with all of that and you're like, you don't know. It causes anxiety and angst because you really don't know, you're uncertain. But then mm-hmm. you add on to that, for some, if you have perfectionist tendencies, it can like amplify at times like 1,000, 11 times, right? Because you are used to having things a certain way and you're thinking that everything should be in a particular order and space, and then it doesn't go that way and you get overwhelmed. And you're exhausted and now you've depleted your functioning of your brain because you're like, this is too much. But it's because you're used to having things in a particular order.
Absolutely. I would say two examples of that. Mm-hmm. Going back to the uncertainty with COVID, circling back to the Risa Tisa story. This is probably why she did not why her decision-making process during this period of time wasn't mm-hmm. where it normally would be, because she probably, there was a lot of fatigue because there was a lot of uncertainty, right? She didn't know. What if this is, she probably was like, what if this is the end of days and I haven't gotten married and I haven't experienced love like this man is claiming to be able to show me? Why am I? And then she probably was making all these questions. He's probably had all these questions in their head right now, in her head, just swirling and swirling and swirling. And she probably did make the best decision because of the uncertainty of it, right? That's a good way to circle it back. But the other thing with the, you have perfectionist tendencies. When I got pregnant, I knew. I was like, I'm going to cook meals ahead of time. I'm going to freeze them, put mm-hmm. them in the refrigerator. So all my husband has to do, pull them out, cook it, heat it up, whatever. I'm going to do this. I had it all laid out. And my child decided she wanted to scare us and we had to have her early. And I had nothing done.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what to do. My mother wasn't here. I just didn't know what to do. I was overwhelmed. I wasn't eating properly. And then what happened? I sent a group text out and like, help me, Jesus. Yeah. I sent y'all a group text like, I need help. Mm-hmm. And I never do that. I was like,
but I'm glad
I need
that
help.
You did though, because that comment right there, I never do though. But the fact that you needed to, you were able to make that decision.
Yes.
To say, I need help. Yeah. Before I get into my full blown
sprung into food. Action. Yes. And y'all sprung into action. I was like, I just need food. Please help me, Jesus.
Please we are over here me. Suffering. Feed me.
And to my husband's credit, my husband is not a cook by any stretch of the imagination. He can do two
bless
things.
His heart. Bless
he can steam some broccoli and he can do something with a chicken breast, but that's about it.
He can do something with a chicken breast.
So when I tell y'all we were struggling, we were struggling. And also understand that even though this was not that long ago, it was like, 6 years ago?
Yeah.
Food, like Instacart and all that, it was a big thing. It was a thing, but it wasn't like it is now, like the DoorDash and Uber. Now, because of COVID, DoorDash, Uber, Instacart, all that, they like, bop, 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 bop. Because now people are like, I can delegate this to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a good way to segue into how to deal with decision fatigue, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we talked about that. We have tools now at our disposal for proper delegation. If I'm a supervisor, I can hire some assistant supervisors to help with the day-to-day things that I can't do. I can delegate my food shopping to Instacart. Mm-hmm. I can delegate my cooking to Uber and DoorDash, right?
Mm-hmm. That was a really nice thing that kind of came out of COVID.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. If nothing else. Yeah.
Yes. Sure. You can learn to decrease your experience of decision fatigue with mindfulness, mm-hmm. right? We talk about that a lot. Mental breaks. I am still a proponent of this to-do list. I have to write it down or I will forget it.
Mm-hmm.
I have to.
But to-do lists sometimes can be overwhelming. I know I'm good for starting a to-do list, and then I get overwhelmed with all the stuff that I need to do, and then I'm deciding on what I need to be doing, and then it's like the whole eat the frog first concept. But then you're like, but if I do this, and it's going to take longer, then I won't get these other things done. And to me, sometimes to-do lists cause me decision fatigue, even though they're supposed to be a tool to help me avoid decision fatigue.
Yes. Well, you could do limit the volume of decisions. I mean, that's a way, but you know what? I talked about the ways that decision fatigue has affected me.
Mm-hmm.
But you've had a situation after you got sick
mm-hmm.
and you had to have surgery
yeah.
where literally decision fatigue for you.
That was that was on another level for me with that decision fatigue. Because mentally, after brain surgery, I could not even form concepts to decide on what to decide on. Because I couldn't do it.
let alone articulating the help that I may have needed to make those decisions, to get help, to make a decision, which was extremely frustrating. Like, I can't even quantify what that was like, to be able to have to make a decision when you're literally, your brain is not in the space to make a decision, to ask for what it is you need help for to make a decision. Very frustrating. Very, very, very frustrating. But, you know, time went on and I was able to do that. But like you said, when you're when you have to figure out if you're physically incapacitated in a way that I was to make decisions, and then asking people for help, that's when those conversations, because you don't think certain things are going to happen to you where you're not going to be able to make decisions. But at some point, you have to acknowledge that that's a possibility, that those things can, that can actually happen. Because I surely didn't think that would ever happen to me in that regard, that I would have to figure out how to ask to help make a decision. But that's life. And you have to adjust and course correct accordingly in those situations, you know? So, and you really got to figure out how to not feel guilty about the decisions that you've made in the moment. Because like you had said before with our friend, when she had made decisions that she wished she may have not have thought about making, but because the fatigue was there, she made them. I can definitely say the same for myself. There are decisions that, hindsight is 20/20. Would I have made some of the decisions I would have made now? But, you know, I'm in a different literal mental and physical state than I was then. But that anxiety and fatigue is real. Mm-hmm. It is overwhelming. It can be crippling, where you just sit there and do nothing. And that's where the procrastination comes in, because you just kind of freeze because you really don't know what to do. You really don't, you really are stuck. And hopefully you have a tribe or those around you that can help facilitate that should those situations come up or present themselves in your life. Hopefully, right. You know,
I'm trying to learn better how to limit the volume of decisions I make on a daily basis, because I am very much a victim of impulse decision making. And sometimes that impulse decision making has cost me money, because instead of just waiting, I did something.
Oh.
And I'm like, if I had just waited, I may have only had to pay this, but then I wound up paying this because I didn't want to wait. Mm-hmm. Or like purchasing something that I really didn't need to buy, but if I just waited a little longer, I would have had this, right?
Right.
Or just doing certain things. I'm making an impulse decision because I just want to hurry up and get this out the way. Right. So I can move on to the next decision.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just do this. And that's me, but I know that people on the opposite end, right? That's just like you said, like I will procrastinate making the decisions until they pile up and they become so overwhelming that I just say, forget it. And I just sit back and I don't make anything. Any decisions.
Yeah. And then you're going to have to deal with that. Your non-decision decision is going to come back and bite you eventually. Because
and that
then
can
you're
cost you money.
To. Yes.
Yeah.
Money,
that
time,
cost you money
sanity,
and time.
All of right. that. All of
right.
that.
You might be spending more money because you waited too long to make the decision.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But then you could also be, I mean, it's a double-edged sword, because let's say you have the decision to make and you go with your gut, which inherently is usually the right decision, right? But when you made that decision, now it causes another decision tree to open up that maybe had you not made that decision as quickly as or impulsively as you did, then you would not have, maybe you'll have two decisions to make instead of 10. Because of the outpouring or the result of what that initial decision was.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, you can't avoid it, because you just can't, you're not a rock. You're not a rock. So you got to make a decision at some point, whether you decide or not, you've made a decision in that.
Not deciding is a decision.
It's a decision. Exactly. Exactly. Not deciding is a decision.
Deciding not to do something, not to make the decision is an active decision.
Correct. Exactly.
You cannot avoid making a decision.
Which is why there's so much fatigue.
Right. Because you're either going to do it, you're not going to do it, or you're not going to make the decision. Either way, you're not going to avoid the decision.
Right. But, if you know, those tools that we gave, you know, can definitely help. But then comes the question, when do you decide to use those tools?
Well, I'll say this. Let me ask you. Mm-hmm. I said these are the five ways to deal with decision fatigue, and there's probably more, but mindfulness, mental breaks, to-do list, proper delegation, and limiting the volume of decisions. Mm-hmm. If you had to pick only two from that list, which ones do you think you use regularly to combat that decision fatigue?
Mental break.
If you only had to, uh-huh.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
And those to-do lists, even though it's so twisted, it's like a whole oxymoron. The whole mental break, like, I'll write a to-do list and then I'll take a mental break and then I'll go back to the to-do list and like process. I'm like, okay, this is what I need to write down, this is what I need to do. I'll write it down, I'll look at it, maybe feel overwhelmed and be like, you know what, I need a mental break, and then I'll come back to it and then I'll start checking them off.
Yeah.
And then, and you know what I mean? And then figure mm-hmm. out where that goes. But I will say, after the mental gymnastics of writing down my to-do list does require a mental break for me after it's done, so that I can recharge and come back and say, now I haven't put these in any particular order, because I used to do that. And that's what I had to make the decision that when I was making my to-do list, I was trying to rank them as I was listing them. And I was, mm-hmm. it was self-defeating. I just mm-hmm. needed to write a list of things mm-hmm. to do and then come back and then itemize them in level of priority, in order of priority, and then be able to delegate what needs to be done within those subcategories. And that was easier for me to process. But
okay. Yeah.
But that took a while for me to figure out how to do that.
Is there anything on that list that you wish you could employ more in helping with the decision fatigue?
Probably. Like, as I'm getting, there's a lot of things that I'm dealing with and I have on my plate these days that require a lot of list making and decision making. And I've figured out I have three different calendars, which may seem overwhelming to some, because we'd be like, why would you do that to yourself? Because I had to realize what each calendar was for. So one is a high level 30,000 foot view of what I have to do. And then that's like at a glance, like a snapshot. Okay, these are the mm-hmm. things I need to do, you know, as far as triggering what I need to do. And then my next calendar may go into time, place, location, and duration of the activity mm-hmm. or what have you. And then the next one may be what was done with those, filling in the details of it. And mm-hmm. I can't put all of those in one space because it's too much. I get overwhelmed. So I have a snapshot view of things, and then I have the detailed list of things, and then I go into the narrative of what happened during that particular
got it,
you know what I mean? But it took me a while to figure out how to organize my thoughts like that, because I was realizing mm-hmm. I was keeping too much up in my head. So mm-hmm. so for me to do that, I employed utilizing my calendars more in that regard.
That's I applaud that. I'm a perfectionist. I still keep my calendars written. I have to write it down.
Yes.
We have
yes.
a calendar in the kitchen. I just went and updated it where I wrote everything down. I mm-hmm. then put it in my Google calendar and my Apple calendar, my, mm-hmm. you know, because I have an iPhone. So I do have three calendars in a sense. Mm-hmm. One is a physical, one's Google, and one's Apple. So no matter where I am, I can figure out what has to be done. I will say, for me right now, the to-do list and mindfulness
mm-hmm.
are the, well, if I can only pick two, the one thing that I know I do well is to-do lists.
Mm-hmm.
I try now because of the, you know, because of the fact that I have anxiety, I try to be more mindful and slow down and mm-hmm. say, okay, you have to make this decision. Let's just take a beat. What goes into making this decision?
Mm-hmm.
Is it something that you need to make right now? Or is it something that you can wait and make the decision on?
Right.
Let's slow your brain down so that you're not being impulsive. Because mm-hmm. we know where impulsivity gets you. Right. So I try to be more mindful in the midst of making decisions. I try to slow my mind down. I wish I could be a little more, I wish I could be better at that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's something that I just started to use. But I do not delegate properly. Even when I was a supervisor, I got to delegation late.
Is it your control thing that you, or?
Oh yeah. It's definitely type A. It's, mm-hmm. it's part and parcel. It's part of nobody's going to be able to do it as well as I do.
Right.
Which is why I still haven't hired someone to clean my house, because I'm like, nobody's going to be able to clean it as well as I do. So why even pay somebody to do it? Right. No, like, it's like, this is sickening. I have an illness. It's type A-ism. It's just like, I have to be in control of my choices. I don't like other people being in control where mm-hmm. they haven't shown me that they actually can be in control. It's very weird. Like, right. I have to see that you are able to make these good decisions for yourself before I even allow you to make one decision for me. And if I feel like you haven't made one good decision for you, bitch, don't even think about making no decision for me, because it's not going to happen.
Right.
Ain't exactly. going to happen. I will say that delegation, though, when my grandmother passed, I think me and my sister do a very good job at lobbying, right?
Mm-hmm.
And delegated. I think I've talked about this before. When my grandmother passed, my sister we're like Liam Neeson. She had a certain specific set of skills. I had a certain specific set of skills. And we knew what those skills were. And we were able to execute my grandmom's funeral without lines getting crossed. I'm a robot. I was a robot during the birth of my daughter. My husband will tell you. I went into like, when they said, you going back now and we taking her, it was just like, meet I literally went into, and I wouldn't say it's robot mode. He called it something else, which is a better term for it, but I can't remember what it is right now. I was just very stoic and very like serious about business. When my grandmother passed away, I was serious about business. We have to do this, this, and this, and this. My sister was like, okay, I have to do my grieving right now. Mm-hmm. So this is great. Yeah. Let me grieve and then I'll come back around to it. I didn't do that. Then when the funeral came, she was able to be the stoic one. And then I was able to have my time to grieve. So mm-hmm. there was some delegation there. I'm working. I'm still a work in progress. I'm still trying to learn how to delegate things in my life a little bit more to right. other things, whether it's to my husband. I don't like saying delegate to my husband because he's not my employee, but right. just letting go of some of the responsibilities that I feel so tightly on.
Mm-hmm.
But I wish I could do a little bit better job at that. And I guess, you know, I usually go into the last sip of tea, but I think that that's something we can all take back. Just doing a better job overall of taking care of ourselves by learning where our weaknesses are when it comes to making decisions.
Yes.
And trying to improve upon those.
Mm-hmm. Fair point.
That's my last tea. That's my last sip of tea.
I'm here for it. So, you know, with that being said, y'all, I hope we were able to give you guys some insight on how the decision fatigue is real. It's not you going in your head, or you're not sitting in your head thinking that this is all made up. It's real. We want to thank you for joining us on Sippin' Tea with Nat and Z. You can follow us on IG at Sippin' Tea _ Nat and Z _ pod, and on Facebook at Sippin' Tea Nat and Z, as you know, to get info on upcoming podcast topics, guests, and news. Thanks for listening, and catch us on the next episode. Woo child, where we get into midlife crisis. Have a good week, y'all. Try not to get overwhelmed with your decisions this week, okay? Okay.